Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today we've got a phenomenal episode. We have Corey Wright. He is the managing broker at William Wright Commercial Real Estate Services.
That's absolutely right. And Corey Wright has been on the show many times in the past. He's been on Vancouver Real Estate Live when that used to be a thing, and it's coming back soon, I hope.
Right.
But he's definitely a past guest fan favorite. There's no question about that. And when we're talking about COVID-19 related things in relation to real estate, there's nobody better to talk about commercial real estate with than Corey Wright.
Yeah, and the best thing, this is such a phenomenal conversation if you're interested in all in commercial real estate, but it's also great for people that are interested in residential real estate because obviously the two are connected. And another thing that's great about this conversation is how Corey is dealing with staying home. There's some phenomenal tips. This guy gets up so early. It's like when most people go to bed. I think you texted Corey this morning at around noon and asked him if he was getting ready for bed or for dinner or what was going on with that.
Yeah. Well, he said good morning. He texted us and said good morning. It was about 9:30 or 10.
Yeah.
Which but, for him but is one the thing evening. About Corey. Yeah. What one thing about Corey also, and I think it comes through in this conversation, and I think with all the conversations we've had with him, is that he's a deep thinker when it comes to these things. I mean, he runs a brokerage with multiple offices. He's attacking this intellectually from a bunch of different angles. And I feel like there is a lot of light shed on what the aftermath in Vancouver looks like because Corey's just a really bright guy.
Yeah. And it's funny because we were recording this over Zoom, so the video is available on our YouTube channel, so definitely go and check that out. But we all, we spent a lot of time trying to get the right angles, and Corey has his Zoom angle just on lock.
I know.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
he wasn't even aware of what Zoom was. He didn't even know what Zoom was, and then when we got on, he already had the angle perfect.
Yeah, he had like the painter's tape on the floor, like where to stand. And like the perfect, but he came on and
First thing you said, man, Corey, have you lost a bunch of weight? He's like, no, man, just found the angle.
Yeah, it's all in pushing my neck out an extra quarter inch. And you know, it's funny because Corey's, you know, he's in good shape overall. But yeah, check out this video on YouTube. He's a serious beefcake.
That's for sure. And there's a few things we wanted to touch on before we got to our talk with Corey. First off, Adam. There has been a couple reviews. We have not talked about iTunes reviews in a while, and the last couple of weeks we've kind of been focused on really just talking about planking, but I think it's worth mentioning there's been a couple of new iTunes reviews here.
Yes, there have, yeah. And I'm going to try and get onto my phone without it disconnecting here, Matt. We've been having some technical issues, but we do shout out to everybody who's given our podcast a review over the years. We've been doing this for now almost 5 years, and we are at 267 reviews on iTunes, which we're very excited about. So thank you for supporting the show. But we had a couple new ones recently, and we'll read them. We had one in March, which I really love. The subject line is Rock On, and the message is, this podcast is fuel.
So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's it.
I love that.
I love that too. This is... this guy drives the Monster Energy truck.
like what? That was your review of his review?
That was my review of his review. It's Rock On, this podcast is fuel. This guy is going to shred the gnar this weekend somewhere. It's Joan WW. It's a great review. And then we have review number two. This one is shout out to, I'm just going to get his name, Justin Sions, I believe is how you pronounce his name. He's a real estate agent in Home
Life. He's a realtor.
Yeah, he's a realtor with Home Life Benchmark Realty in White Rock. And Justin, shout out. We really appreciate lots of agents that listen to our program, and we're really grateful for that. But he says, you guys are by far my fave podcast right now. We are realtors in the Valley with a little team called TOTL. I think it's maybe Total. And I've listened to every episode for the past couple of years. I recommend your podcast to anyone that will listen. You guys are both entertaining and educational. I love your guests, and you have a great sense of humor, and the podcast has a great vibe. Keep up the great work, you guys. I'm a huge fan. So thank you so much for that review, Justin. Appreciate it. Justin and his team, as we'll just highlight that again, they're out in White Rock, Home Life Benchmark Realty. Appreciate the review. And Matt, what else do we got before we have our interview with Corey?
Well, what else do we have? Well, here's the thing, a little bit of an update on the market here. We've been in deep freeze for the last 2 to 3 weeks, I would say.
Right.
And we've talked about it quite a bit on the podcast. There's been a lot of good news in BC, and we're not out of the woods yet, but there's been a lot of positive news coming from Dr. Bonnie Henry specifically. She's doing God's work, that's for sure. And we just wanted to see. People are still buying and selling real estate. It's definitely a slower moment. A lot of people are not going out when they have to, but people still do need to sell and need to buy real estate. And we have a new listing that is a phenomenal listing. It is a 3-bedroom listing right at the Key in Lonsdale and Lower Lonsdale in North Vancouver. You guys are going to want to see this listing. Adam and I are doing a virtual open house. This is the latest thing, a virtual open house, Sunday 2 to 4. We are going to be both at this listing marketing this incredible 3-bedroom with unbelievable views, corner unit,
10 feet apart,
brand new. Oh my God. Oh, it is. This is, you're going to want to see this. We're going to be live on realtor.ca. There's a new virtual open house component there, and it goes out to Facebook. It goes out to Instagram. So watch for that. If nothing more, come by and say hello.
Yeah, and we want to be as clear as we possibly can. We are adapting to these new times. We are doing virtual open houses, so there'll be nobody coming through the property. You and I actually are not even going to be riding the elevator up together. There's some serious
I'm throwing the keys down. I'm throwing the keys down from the balcony.
And honestly, this is we are taking all precautions necessary. Absolutely.
But the nice thing about this, Adam, is that anyone can log in on their phone or the computer, and they can actually ask us questions. So if you're interested in seeing more detail in the walk-in closet in the master, hey, like, we'll walk over and show you that detail. So it's a really interesting kind of new way to look at properties, and we're going to be trying it out Sunday 2 to 4.
Yep.
The inaugural attempt at a virtual open house, and I'm really excited about it.
No, it's amazing. If you want to open the fridge, Matt's an expert at opening the fridge.
Just don't ask me to turn on the stove.
Yeah, exactly. But you can order DoorDash with your eyes closed.
That's right. But maybe without further ado, this makes me think of our talk with Corey. Corey Wright from William Wright Commercial. This is the guy to listen to when it comes to commercial, real estate, and COVID-19 for sure. So stay tuned. It's a good one.
Okay, so we're here with Corey Wright from William Wright Commercial, managing broker. Welcome, Corey.
Thanks for having me get back, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time again, Corey.
It's okay. Got lots of time right now.
Past guest, fan favorite, for sure.
If Matt doesn't say fan favorite, the interview didn't happen.
I thought I was a fan favorite the first time I was ever on. Fan favorite, but I've never been here before.
That's the title of each one of ours. Fan favorite, Jones is a good. Yeah, we like to pump everyone's tires.
It's probably my mom writing into you guys asking to get me on the show one day. It's probably what it was.
So, Corey, most of our viewers are familiar with you, but can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yeah. So I'm the managing broker with William Wright Commercial. We have 4 offices throughout the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island, and we handle all commercial asset classes, retail, industrial, multifamily, development sites, office, and we are also just launched a property management division, which now we can handle all of our clients and potential clients, commercial property management in all asset classes across the province.
Nice. And before we get into the commercial real estate, we've talked to a lot of people now in the last 2-3 weeks about the impact of COVID-19 on the residential real estate and on the economy large, in a kind of on a larger scale. But we're coming on 3 weeks here of isolation and social distancing. Sounds like you're doing it right.
Well, I think the key thing right now is, or the trick to it is try to keep your habits the same as if you were getting up going to work every day. Because I think it's really easy to fall into bad practice, or you sleep in a little bit, or maybe, you know, maybe you eat fairly decent throughout the week, but now you're throwing in a couple of Whoppers on Wednesday. I think as hard as it is to try to keep those habits, if you can, now that once we sort of venture out of this and back into the work mode, you'll be easier to bounce back versus kind of almost coming back from a holiday where it takes a week or two to kind of get your mind ready to go. And I think the key thing for everyone to remember that this is, you know, it's a bump in the road. We're all dealing with it as a world. We're dealing with it, but we will get through it. We'll get past it. And you know, the numbers in BC have been pretty encouraging. I'd be very optimistic this week's numbers on a daily average will be less than last week, because now we're kind of about 3 weeks into the whole social distancing thing. So a lot of the efforts 2 or 3 weeks ago should be showing dividends this week. And I think there'll be a lot of optimism going through this week. And hopefully we'll get everything back to normal and probably a new reality sooner than later. And I think it's important to be ready to go when that time comes.
So Corey, so what kind of things are you doing to kind of make sure that your habits are there?
Well,
I'm not in a 3-piece suit.
Yeah, no, well, actually, to be honest with you, when you told me we're going on Zoom here, I put a shirt on because I've been usually doing a lot of work with no shirt on right now, which is probably scarier than anything. You mean I'm one of those kooky guys that wakes up about 3:30 in the morning to get a workout in, get my day going, get ahead of the curve if I can. So I've been trying to keep those habits going. Unfortunately, due to the lack of weights at my house, I've been doing a lot of makeshift Pilates, and not in a very good way. It's probably horrible to watch. It would probably be great reality TV right now, but I'm doing everything I can. And I've sort of found, like I said earlier, I've positioned this camera just about right that my turkey chin is hidden. So it looks like I'm actually doing okay. But when I stand up and none of my clothes fit me, reality's going to kick in relatively quickly here.
Oh man, that's great. 3:30 in the morning, that is incredible during these times.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing to do, trust me, but I have to force myself to do it, because I know if I don't, I'll be a write-off for 2 weeks after trying to get myself back up at those times. So
yeah, what time do you go to bed to get up at 3:30?
To be honest with you, I'm usually out between 8 and 9. The last couple nights I've been pushing the envelope. I was watching the Tiger King on Netflix there, and I was losing brain cells every episode, but at the same point in time I couldn't turn it off, so I was up a little bit later last two nights trying to get all those episodes in to figure out what everyone's talking about.
Speaking of a tragedy, yeah. so maybe we'll pivot here to why we asked you back, Corey. Broadly speaking, and this is very broad, and I think you have a lot to say about it, but how has COVID-19 impacted the commercial real estate world here in the Lower Mainland?
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty obvious. I think with the shutdown, especially things like in the hospitality sector, the hotel sector, service-based like barbershops and beauty salons, it's been pretty evident what's happened. And I think, we will get through this. That part I'm extremely confident in. How quickly do we get back to normal is another thing. I think the numbers will hopefully be very optimistic this week, and we'll get a better indication of how that looks moving forward. But I think, there's definitely going to be some casualties, unfortunately, probably out there. But, it's going to get back to business. And I think between landlords and tenants, really, really, we're encouraging a lot of clients that if they're in that position, to make sure you're working together to get through this, because it's not an isolated incident. One town or one area is seeing, the whole world is dealing with this, unfortunately. And there's a lot of support on the banking side of things to hopefully help get both residential and commercial landlords and tenants and homeowners through this. So, there will be a lot of, I think, new layouts and new things that will come of this. Even questions that I think that are out there that we'll have to take a bit of time. Like, does this really affect the co-working spaces? Like, is this going to affect the WeWorks and the Regis of the world, where maybe people don't want to work side by side in a room with 100 people moving forward? And, do restaurants have to have more space between seats in the future, where they don't have 300 seats, they got 200? A lot of questions, that part need to be answered.
Because in terms of casualties, I don't know if you're comfortable naming names, but you did mention WeWork seems like an obvious one. What maybe even broadly speaking, which kind of areas are going to be hit the hardest here, and where do you see the casualties?
Well, I think something like WeWork, obviously, they were kind of in an unstable position, it seemed, before all this hit. I mean, that business model of putting 100 or 200 or 300 people into a room, generally in an open office concept, is that a model that society wants to move forward with? That I don't know. Maybe a lot of people realize they don't want to work there. They want to work from home. Or maybe companies that are putting people into these spaces don't want their brokers or don't want their employees sitting in a room with 100 people. Maybe they want more privacy. So, does that alter that model? That model there would have a lot of effect on Vancouver's office market, because there's hundreds of thousands of square feet currently leased to that co-working industry. There's hundreds and thousands of square feet committed to in some of the new construction we have downtown Vancouver. And if that model doesn't survive, that could put a lot of inventory back into the marketplace. There's stuff like that. I think some of the smaller restaurants, the mom and pop operations, unfortunately, may have a tough time. I think the big question is a landlord willing to work with their tenant during this tough time is number one. Number two, if that option is there, how quickly do we return to normal for those types of businesses? As a society, do we all just run back because we're so pent up at home that we want to get back seeing each other? Do we all run back into a restaurant right away and they sort of pick up and see sales as normal? Or does this take 2 or 3 months to phase in to see those sales get up to it? And I think a lot of people, from a business ownership standpoint, is a lot of these small businesses, yeah, they profit and they probably provide a good living for the hardworking owners, but they can't sustain 2 or 3 months of no revenue. That's one thing too, is like running these restaurants, some of these places might have $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $100,000 a month in overhead between large staffs and rent and all that stuff that not a lot of business can withstand that. So I think a lot of it would be a case-by-case basis between a landlord and tenant. And I think your relationships with your landlord and tenant up to this point will play a large factor moving forward, where if you've been a tenant that's been willing to work with the landlord and vice versa, that will probably go a long way, versus if you've been a challenging tenant to deal with, the landlords may not extend the same opportunity to you, because there's nothing in a lease that sort of really defines what's going on. And there's no government policies that mandate over a private contract between a landlord and tenant that the landlord has to extend and treat a tenant in such a manner.
Does this have the potential to change the lease agreement?
I think moving forward, you're going to find that things that are sort of slightly touched on in leases, and every lease in commercial is different versus residential. You kind of have a government form that everyone relies on. In commercial, every lease is different. You'll hear things like landlord standard form lease. There's no standard form for the industry. That's the standard form that landlord has chosen to work with for that particular property. So no two commercial leases are really alike. There's things like force majeure, which talks about unforeseen circumstances that a tenant cannot afford to pay the rent. Whether this falls into that or if landlords are accepting of that is another thing. So I think moving forward, I think you're going to find that things like the COVID issue that we're dealing with and how some places, unfortunately, were forced to shut down and couldn't operate, and ones that could operate saw probably a huge dramatic fall in their ability to generate revenue to pay the rent, will definitely become worked into leases by lawyers, both on the tenant side and the landlord side moving forward.
So William Wright has a property management component.
Correct.
To the business. And you guys work with a lot of placing tenants, but also with landlords. How are you advising? I mean, it sounds like there's, on the one side, problematic tenants, it seems like an opportunity to get rid of them right now. But how generally are you guys advising, and what's kind of the feel on the street with how landlords are trying to approach these difficult times?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's a mixed bag. Every landlord has a different approach of dealing with it. We are encouraging anyone that reaches out to us from a landlord perspective, your best bet is to work with your tenant. A lot of commercial lenders that we've either dealt with on behalf of a client, or we've been reported back to from clients and their experience with the commercial lenders, they've been very, very easy to deal with overall on the deferral. Now, keep in mind, there's nothing that says a landlord has to pass on that deferral to their tenant, but we would highly encourage landlords to work with their tenants, because if you have to subsidize or help out for 2 or 3 potential months, that could be the best investment you make. Because if there was a major vacancy issue, Fortunately, in Vancouver, we have a lot of historical lows on a lot of the asset classes and the vacancy, so we wouldn't be as greatly affected as some other marketplaces might be. But it costs money to re-tenant a property. You mean tenants could want free rent. They could want a fixturing period for build-outs. There could be something called tenant improvement allowance, which is money from the landlord paid directly to the tenant to help out with his build-out cost. I mean, brokers get paid in the leasing aspect. Lawyers get paid for drafting leases. So it can be very costly to re-tenant a property. And I mean, if a landlord's looking at the big picture to subsidize or help out in any way possible, whether it's a deferral or a relief for a couple months, could be the best investment they make moving forward, because there's just no guarantee how quickly that we get back to normal with certain asset classes or types of businesses.
It's got to be impossible right now to find a business to take on a commercial lease right this moment.
Yeah, we find most people are kind of doing the wait and see approach. I mean, I think a lot of the people that we deal with are on the business minded aspect that this is not going to be forever. It's not Armageddon. This is going to, we will resume life, and it's just a matter of figuring out how quickly does that happen. And you know, believe it or not, we're still getting listings. We're still removing subjects on deals. We have brokers that are still, you know, closing properties, all of that stuff. But for the majority of it, I think a lot of people on the buy side and the lease side are more taking a wait and see approach, or we're having to do things where the tenant wants to move forward, but they want to push back the commencement date, maybe 2 or 3 months, maybe from July to September, just to allow for more time for life to get back to normal.
So, Corey, you mentioned before we went live, and you kind of mentioned it here a little bit about say Joey's moving from X number of tables to potentially a smaller number of tables, just because people social distancing kind of plays out over the long term in changing habits and changing norms. Can you talk a little bit more about how you think the culture potentially shifts here and what that means for the commercial real estate business?
Well, I think moving forward, there definitely will be some questions that we will need to get answers to, like that, like from a restaurant standpoint, where, I mean, you know, leases are not cheap in Vancouver. Some restaurants are on what they call percentage rent deals, where they'll pay a sort of a fixed amount and then a percentage of their sales over a predetermined benchmark, where there's a lot of pressure from restaurant owners to probably hit these numbers, because there is a lot of high costs that go involved in that business, which could be, you mean, the profit margins could be shrinking, you mean, every year with the cost of goods and labor costs and rental costs, that maybe moving forward, maybe there's not 300 tables in 5,000 square feet. Maybe society doesn't want that. Maybe society wants more room in between the tables, where maybe they're forced to go down to 200 seats. And you mean that could trickle up to the landlords, because tenants will say, hey, I can't afford to pay you that because I have one third less capacity in my restaurant to generate revenue to pay you rent. So, I mean, that I think will sort of yet to be determined. Like we talked about, like the office, the big trend in offices has always been open office concepts lately in industrial office spaces. You know, maybe people don't want to be packed into rooms like that anymore. Maybe they want more privacy moving forward. I think companies like Amazon, obviously, where maybe people in the past, maybe some of the older generations have been hesitant to use their services because they're just not familiar with them, that are now using them. So that business maybe booms, which then has an effect on an already tight industrial marketplace. I mean, there's a lot of stuff like that I think is yet to be determined. And I think it even goes broader than that if you want to talk international, where maybe a lot of North American-based companies will maybe look at bringing manufacturing back to North America in some form or another moving forward, because unfortunately this might not be a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. This could be reality for us, and every 3 to 5 years we might deal with something similar to this. And maybe they don't want to have these shutdowns overseas like they've done, where traditionally it's been cheaper to manufacture. Maybe taking that 3 or 4 month shutdown and the production hiccups that's going to cause for a lot of companies, maybe they look at paying a higher cost to move it back to North America, just purely based on the fact that if this does happen again, that it's a safer and maybe it's easier for them to control.
Well, this seems at least to have been a steroid injection into delivery service,
totally.
Everything, right? I think that's a great point about industrial. You can imagine how that market. And are you seeing rumblings of that? Like, I mean, I know it's already a tight market in the greater Vancouver area. So do you think that there might be more of a shift towards creating more industrial?
Yeah, I think you mean the industrial, you mean, market already has historically low vacancy rates and probably some of the lowest in North America. And there's a lot of pressure on that marketplace because of it. And I think this is probably going to add more pressure in the future, because you're going to get a lot of home-based, or, you know, a lot of people who are from home that are forced to get products via delivery, whether it be from Staples or it's from Joey's on a restaurant standpoint or whatever, that they're going to be forced to do this. So that's going to put more pressure on industrial markets that deal in warehouses. The other thing, when you look at someone like a Joey's, do you mean these ghost kitchens that are popping up on all the food courier apps? I mean, do they look at, maybe we don't want to spend $20,000 on putting a sit-down restaurant in place. We want to go rent an industrial space and put a commissary kitchen idea in place, and we launch it as a ghost kitchen, and we can have better profit margins doing that. So maybe those restaurants shrink in size because they're doing other things that would, you mean, potentially come out of industrial spaces that put further pressure on there.
For those who don't know about ghost kitchens or haven't heard of them, can you just maybe explain what that is and what's going on there?
Sure. So you see a lot of these food apps where you might order from a Joey's or an Earl's type of thing, a brand name that we could go sit down and eat at. Other times, a lot of these places are operating what they call ghost kitchens, which are restaurants that don't exist physically. You can't physically go, but it's more or less a menu that's been produced by either a restaurant company or a potential non-restaurant company that operates out of a commissary kitchen under a brand name that they've created themselves. So maybe you go to Corey's Kitchen, and there's an online or through Uber Eats, you can go to Corey's Kitchen. There's a menu you can pick from, and that food is produced from a commissary kitchen in an industrial area and then delivered directly to your door, but you can't physically go to the restaurant. So, I mean, those are probably a lot cheaper to operate in the short term, and they're probably a lot cheaper to operate in the medium to long term with respect to labor costs, that maybe that becomes a much more popular trend, because I think you might find a lot of people now that probably never used the Uber Eats or the DoorDash services now are forced to use them and now are becoming reliable on them. And I think it could really change the customer service cycle of how that industry works.
Maybe just shifting gears here. I mean, there's a couple things that seem very specific to Vancouver, right? We're a service-oriented city. We've talked about it on the show before, and we've talked about it with you, but the cruise ship industry, the hotel industry, the co-work industry, you know, the culture that exists in Vancouver, I think that doesn't exist in every city across the country, where it's a very much a go out, you know, 3, 4, 5 nights a week. All of this seems like there's real potential for a catastrophe, especially in you know, residential. As the saying goes, everybody needs you know, a roof to keep over their head. On the commercial side, not so much. Can you talk about, and I know you're fairly optimistic on the market, but what is kind of a worst case scenario look like here?
Well, I think if you look at like the asset classes that are probably going to be the affected the most, you mean hotel and hospitality would definitely be number one. You mean Vancouver has had a great hotel industry for quite some time. That has got huge impacts, because those people that are coming off of the cruise ships and are staying at the hotels are also going to eat at the restaurants and going shopping at the Nordstrom's and all of that stuff. So, you know, I think if you wanted to look at a doomsday perspective, you know, I mean, the hotel industry could have a very slow start, because the reality is, do we all get back on planes and cruise ships and get right back to doing what we're doing? Or is there a little bit of lag time on that? You know, maybe something like the cruise ship industry that was so popular that it obviously has taken had a lot of bad press with this COVID-19 situation, where you get 3,000 people on a ship that can't get off and it just spreads throughout. Maybe that market doesn't really come back to what it once was. And, you know, if there's not all the ships showing up, then there's not all the guests at the restaurants and at the hotels and all, you mean, shopping at the stores. So, you mean, from a doomsday perspective, yeah, there could be. I mean, Vancouver is such an international city that we are very dependent on travel and stuff like that. But there's a lot of new companies that Vancouver was never really a head office market for, say, offices, you know, going back years and years and years. And now you're getting more and more companies are calling Vancouver home, whether it's a secondary office space or like a Lululemon that was founded here that's a great employer in the city. I mean, those people need to go back out. I mean, they're going to have disposable income to go back out. You got the tech market, which has been a huge driver of I think the Vancouver office market, but all obviously probably has a lot of spinoff into the residential market and also disposable income and how it's spent, because you are getting a lot of young professionals that are getting paid very, very well, that have disposable income, that can't afford to go out to restaurants, they can go afford to have drinks, they can go shop at the Holt Renfrews of the world. So, and the tech industry doesn't seem like it's been greatly affected because of this. And if not, you know, if anyone comes out ahead, the tech industry could come out even stronger because more and more people are using apps and talking on Zoom. I mean, a lot of companies that probably never thought they could work remotely and thought they had to have 5, 6, 7,000 square foot offices and everyone had to show up every day, they've been forced to work remotely, and maybe they're finding it's not as bad. And maybe that footprint of a 5, 6, 7,000 square foot office tenant becomes 3,000. And now they have people working from home, and cloud-based services and things like Zoom are things that now that will benefit by in the long term.
Right. Yeah. Even the idea of the conference, the international or national conference, right? Like, I think it's kind of an interesting, I think Adam said it in response to your answer, Corey, but this idea of a lot of the technological changes that we've seen over the last, say, 10 years, it's like putting it on steroids, right? 100%. And especially kind of dragging some of the more Luddite-ish amongst us into the technological age. I mean, we would have done this in person before. We may never do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like I asked you before, you said, like, how do I get a Zoom account going? Like, this is, and now that I have it, I'm going to download a Zoom everybody I know after this.
Yeah. Not that you're one of the Luddites, Corey, but the reality though is, you know, I mean, it has forced everybody to find a way to adapt to this new world, right? And in a lot of cases, it's actually not that bad. I mean, we had a Zoom drink with some friends the other night, and there was no worry about like a taxi. It was still a lot of fun. We were comfortable.
We didn't have to help run down the stairs.
Yeah.
Stumble into your bed after.
Yeah. It was actually kind of awesome. And I think it's also like the joke that, you know, I keep seeing is like, hey, it turns out it actually could have been an email, this meeting, right? Like,
yeah.
And so I think people are kind of collectively realizing that, right?
I think you're exactly right. Like, it's really forced a lot of people and companies to really change their ways. Like, I know, I mean, talking to some other business owners that are now having to like sign checks remotely now and electronically, that before that they knew it was coming, but they never thought when it would come. And now they've been forced into it and they realize it's not nearly as bad.
Sorry to interrupt, but I don't know if this is true or not, but I just heard that notaries and lawyers are doing closings with DocuSign.
Well, we've everything that we had scheduled to close sort of in, you know, late March and into early April is all closed on time, and talking to banks, they've all funded on time. And I think some lawyers have been making exceptions from, say, they don't want wet signatures. They'll take an e-signature for now, followed up by a wet signature at a later date. I really think it's going to change how we do business moving forward. It's going to force us to get into that electronic age more so than we probably already are, and probably faster than we've ever been. And I think there'll be a lot of things that will change because of it, like whether it's meetings or DocuSigns and transfer of money and all of that stuff. It will definitely change, I think, how we operate as a business community around the world.
Well, the best thing, you know, we just had a chat the other day with John Barry, who wrote a book on the Spanish influenza, and he was talking.
I was listening to that this morning.
Yeah, he was mentioning the different countries and how they've responded, and Singapore not even shutting down their schools.
Yeah.
But you know, it's kind of in keeping in mind that, you know, a lot of Asian countries have been through this or some form of this recently, right? And they've been forced to deal with the threat of a pandemic before, where this feels very new to North America, right? Like even the idea of seeing everybody in masks and gloves, not uncommon necessarily in Hong Kong or in parts of China, even when we're not dealing with this, right?
Yeah.
I think if anything, we're going to come out of this better business practices and better prepared if this does happen again, of course.
And I think if you look at it, like if we want to compare it to something, and obviously it's not the same, if you look at like kind of the financial crash of like the 08-09 timeframe, I mean, that was an economy that crashed. I mean, we're kind of in like almost like a forced recession type of thing right now, where we've been forced to close. The economy was very, very healthy before this. And yes, it might take a little bit of time. I don't necessarily know we'll have a V bounce back like the first week we open. I think it'll be a U shape and I mean, how long is the bottom of that U is yet to be determined. But I mean, the economy was thriving. The financial system probably has never been in a better time or better position to unfortunately encounter something like this. And they learned a lot probably from 08-09. We learned a lot probably from 9-11 before that and having to deal with these catastrophes of some sort. So from an economic standpoint, it may be a little bit to get it going again, but the economy before was extremely healthy. And in Vancouver, we do depend on travel and international trade for sure. But I mean, we have, I mean, how many tens of thousands of people a year moving in here into this Metro Vancouver area that, I mean, these people are already a place to live. They're going to need a place to work. So there's going to be that entrepreneurial spirit, get back together, and people are going to get back out there. And I think you'll see a lot of small business campaigns and support local businesses because as a country and a province, we're all dealing with this together. And I think we've been very fortunate, and I've sort of said this from the start, we look at a lot of these catastrophes around the world, like say in Italy. Well, if you look at Italy from a population standpoint at almost 61 million people, they're a country that's 33 times smaller than Canada. And you look at the average age of an Italian person, they're much older than the average Canadian person. I think they were very slow to react. That BC, and I've never been one to come out and say, great things about the NDP, but you have to applaud them in this situation that I think they've stepped up and they've done a good job and they've done what they can to get us through this. And I think you got to look at everything from the government level has worked out very well in BC. And I don't think we had the same demographics and dynamics that they do say in a New York or something like that in Italy, where we're going to turn into those situations, but they definitely make you aware and they bring out fear for sure. I think we'll be much further ahead when this is all said and done than maybe they will and how quickly they come out of it.
It's interesting to think about kind of the larger, not necessarily the economic impact, although that's something really interesting, but kind of the cultural shifts you're talking about, but also this kind of move that seemed to be in the air, but I think you're right, this more nationalistic, with 3M, I don't know where you saw where they're...
Yeah.
The masks or the equipment that they're producing, not going over the borders, not coming to Canada or Latin America. And there's this new push, or it feels like probably it did 30, 40 years ago, to nationalize and make sure that you can self-sustain. This is all a long way of saying there does seem like there's a bunch of changes occurring here. We've talked about kind of worst case scenario for Vancouver, but where I think light industry was mentioned, but where do you see the real opportunities in the next, call it 3 to 6 months, potentially even the next 3 to 5 years, if we see some pretty significant shifts here?
Well, I think you look at, we're fortunate, like I said earlier, is all the asset classes in commercial in, BC for the Lower Mainland, Greater Vancouver area are very, very strong. And I think, industrial, which has already been a fantastically performing asset class for years now, is only going to get better with time, because now I think you're going to see a shift where a lot of more businesses that need that type of space are going to get into it. And unfortunately, a lot of the land that's currently used for that is becoming hard to find because it's turning into towers. And I think you're going to look at like multifamily. People need a roof over their head. I think it's going to be a safe haven. For investors in the long term, obviously right now, there's been some challenges posed from the NDP with regards to percentage rental increases. I think a lot of people look at the landlord perspective from a tenant standpoint, and because you own a multifamily building, you're automatically a big bad billionaire. And a lot of people forget that a lot of these people are taking their hard-earned savings and their life savings, and they're investing it into this property as an investment. They may not necessarily know how to operate it, but there's big mortgages. And when you're looking at potentially only having a 2.5% or 2.6% increase on your rents, well, my property taxes as a building owner are going up far greater than 2.5%. My insurances are going up far greater, especially this last year. Hydro, garbage removal, recycling. And I think, this past year, there's sort of been some uncertainty maybe surrounding that, because if my rents only go up 2.5%, 2.6%, no one's leaving because there's no vacancy. So I'm not being able to turn over those units to get fair market, but my expenses are going up 6-8%. How does that look? And I think this is going to, unfortunately what's happened here now, it might put a little bit more of a spin on the multifamily, where maybe it's not as rocky of an asset class as maybe a retail could be, where maybe people will start to say, hey, I'll look at that and I'll take those potential maybe minimal increases every single year to know that I could be running a 99% occupancy rate year round, versus in retail, maybe you might not have the same. And I mean, in retail in Vancouver, there's a lot of restaurants and a lot of service-based industries there. So, I mean, how that sort of plays itself out moving forward, there could be opportunity for new tenants that maybe looked at spaces before that were maybe unaffordable or unachievable. Maybe there's a little bit of relief on that aspect of it. I mean, I really don't think there's going to be long-term or medium-term problems. There definitely will probably be some jockeying in the coming months, maybe year. But overall, I think you can't go wrong getting into it. If you look at the office market, I mean, the office market has had such low cap rates on investment property because it's been so challenging because of things like WeWork and the Amazons taking up all the space. If there's any little bit of relief and that vacancy rate does rise a little bit, you might see some of those cap rates become much more generous for investors. So there could be a good opportunity maybe to get in the short term when 2 or 3 years we'll probably go back to where we are, if not sooner. There's just in commercial, we always suffer from, there's not usually a lot of inventory to pick from to start with, or at least not a lot of good inventory to pick from. So if that good inventory becomes a little bit more in the short term, there could be some opportunities to pick up some properties at some probably really attractive, short-term pricing that a year down the road or 2 years down the road might look like phenomenal investments. And if it's cheaper to fund it, to acquire it, through interest rates now, that's a lot of money you could be saving on a brand new front-loaded mortgage moving forward, that there could be some exceptional opportunities to pick up some property. I don't think anyone is looking to sell in the immediate future unless they've sort of committed money somewhere else. And if that's the case, they may get out for a little bit less than they wanted. So again, there could be that opportunity to pick it up. But overall, I'm extremely optimistic. It is a challenge in the short term, but it's just a bump in the road that we'll all figure out as we go forward. And Vancouver's always had such a great business economy overall that I think we'll be able to sustain any challenges ahead, whether it's the industry, the cruise ship industry or the hotel industry, we'll figure it out.
You know, just as a final, not necessarily a final thought, just one thought that I had that might be the final thought.
Give it a shot.
Yeah. So the idea that, it takes a long time for people to kind of come out of hibernation and maybe, I was at Peppino's right before kind of the shutdown here. And I'm thinking for me to be in Peppino's right now, I don't know if you've been there where it's so tight.
Yeah, heard of it.
Like I'm uncomfortable in my office, and I heard somebody talking. There's like one other person in the whole building, and it's making me anxious right now. I think there is sort of a delay in kind of getting back to normal. But I think in the Spanish flu, one of the more interesting things, John Barry said a ton of interesting things, but one thing that he said that was really interesting was his theory was the Roaring Twenties was kind of came out of the Spanish flu,
yeah.
Right? It was like this, this sort of, hey, tomorrow might be the last. Let's have a go. So there's a potential that I could really see that happening right now, yeah. In the sense that, like, I feel very much like you didn't realize how much community mattered,
yeah.
To you and face-to-face contact, right? Like, I think there's a real potential that we come back kind of swinging here, just in terms of, you don't know what you got till it's gone type thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm betting on that. Like I've bought a whole bunch of MGM stock thinking that this thing's one third of the price it was. And when this gets back to normal, every guy is pent up, is going to be getting on a plane, whether they want to or not, to go to Vegas. So I think it could be either or, right? It could have a slow phase back in and then it doesn't realize, or it could be that opposite, right? Where we were anticipating that it's a little bit slower to get back in, but everyone just wants to get out and do stuff. They want to go for drinks and say hi. They want to get back to their office and see their coworkers. They want to get back and maybe they're, service-based industries. I can tell you right now through this conversation, the longer my hair goes, I have to move my part further and further up my hair. And now that it's sitting at its highest point because my hair is so long, I've now noticed that I definitely have a receding hairline with age. So, there's a lot of things. I'll be buying a hat after this. That people will just get back out and do, right? And I really honestly believe it's going to be one or the other. Either it's going to be a little bit slower than we anticipate, but it will be totally fine, or it's going to come back and just overwhelm us with the demand, and people want to get back out and support local business.
Just thinking about, like, I cannot wait for the day that I'm not thinking about that the table sitting too close to me is more because they're listening to my conversation, yeah. And that I'm scared that I'm going to catch a life-threatening disease. That's for sure. I can't wait for that day.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Like it's going to come back, and we live in an amazing city, and we live in an amazing country that everyone, I think, for the most part, has done an amazing job trying to get everyone through it. We're all dealing with this together. No one's immune to it. Doesn't matter what business you're in or where you live, no one's immune to it. So I think everyone's been doing a good job, and there's a really big sense of kind of like almost like national pride, I think, will come out of this. I think with the 3M thing, like you were pointing out, it's definitely going to force countries to maybe look at things a little bit differently, that if they have to self-sustain, I mean, can they do that? Does it make the federal government make more attractive type packages, whether it's through tax rates or whatever it is, for industry to come to Canada and say, hey, produce your products here? I mean, there's a lot of that stuff that I think can come out of this, and we won't have those answers in the short term. It could be a long term, and over the next 5 years, if we see manufacturing come back to North America, or countries are manufacturing products where they're founded, we'll probably, you know, definitely play a key role in how that plays out. But I think, I would not be surprised if it comes back more than we think and quicker than we think, because a lot of people I talk to, are more on the, I can't wait to get back to the office. I can't wait to go out for lunch and see how Susie's doing. I can't, my clothes don't fit. I need more clothes. My hair's too long. So, there could be stuff like that could really, really spur. And I know, talking to a lot of our staff across the Lower Mainland of Vancouver Island, people just are itching to get back to the office and just see everybody. And we get these sales calls going every, two or three times a week. And a lot of it's just BS talk, talking about, Tom Brady playing for the Bucks, because guys just miss each other, right? And I know a lot of our administration staff that probably some days would rather be elsewhere, want to get back into their office and start filling out forms again. It's stuff that we took for granted that I think will be very appreciative moving forward. And it would not surprise me one bit if things get back to a little bit quicker than we all anticipate.
Well, if union, I'm on Union Street right now, watching as like 100 bikes have gone by, maybe more in this conversation. And I mean, if the people that are failing to do the social distancing is any indication of people ready to come back, like I agree wholeheartedly. I think this is I think people are going to go back to business, back to normal. And Matt, I think you and I might be in the germaphobe minority here.
Yeah, hopefully they don't go back to normal too soon. But
yeah, that's what I'm hoping. But yeah. I don't know. I think people are itching to be outside and get back to business as usual.
Well, I think it's like anything, right? You almost take for granted that we literally have almost had our freedom taken away to some degree, because before, as a society, we could go wherever we want, do whatever we want, whenever we want. And now it's like you're almost like you can't, if you want to go to a restaurant, you really can't. And if you want to go to the grocery store, you might have certain hours you can go, or there might be limited food you can get. So, this, I think, will really make us, be very fortunate for what we have. And we're so fortunate where we live and all the stuff that's provided to us, that maybe we'll be a little more humbling about it moving forward and really appreciate it. And I think as a community, we'll do everything we can to make sure this doesn't sort of flare up again. I think you'll see the government this week come out and, really kind of not be too excited in the numbers and the optimism, because I think there's fear that everyone just realized, oh, we're over, and everyone just rushes back to it. I think there will have to be some level of phasing back to it. And I think, we don't know what those answers are. If a Nordstrom's reopens and there's only 100 guests or 100 customers allowed in Nordstrom's at once versus a free-for-all, there could be sort of some phasing of this back into normalcy. But I think the government, probably as much as anybody, wants to get us back there, because right now they're playing the role of employer and they're playing the role of customer. And there's only so much money in the coffers and so much money they can print.
So Corey, just maybe one last question for me. I've been having a conversation with a lot of people who are now, it seems like this is going to be until July, the lockdown from what everybody's talking about. What if a second wave hits and puts us back inside in the fall? Does that change things dramatically for what's going to happen in commercial?
I think it could, because I think, if we get things back and things are starting to slowly phase back into normal and businesses are starting to see revenues go back to where they once were, hopefully, to have that kind of kick them in the teeth right when they're kind of getting back on their feet would probably, change some of the outlooks moving forward. I really hope that, I think as a society, that people are obviously hopefully very aware of what we're going through, and we'll take a very cautious approach. And I think you have to have confidence in your government and the medical teams and all of that stuff in your healthcare system that they're going to do everything they can to get us the most information we need to make those decisions to do it properly. I think when the government, I think, will be very optimistic, like I said, with their numbers, but they're not going to be too excited about it because they don't want people to run back into the ways they once were. I mean, there is that fear that does a second wave come. When you look at most respiratory infections and respiratory diseases, they seem to travel better in the wintertime than they do in the summertime. That's why the flu is very popular from October to February. You don't really hear a lot of it in June and July. I mean, that's reality that we have to deal with. So that's why I think there will be sort of a new reality that we do deal with until a vaccine is created, where maybe, like I said, it's 100 customers in Nordstrom's versus 1,000 customers in Nordstrom's. I mean, stuff like that will become kind of our new reality. I would be optimistic to think that hopefully, they will be able to get, some form of the economy back in place here, hopefully in the coming weeks or maybe month or so, at least in some phases, to get it slowly going back. I think the longer it goes, the more challenging the outcome becomes. Because like I said, a lot of small business owners can't afford to not be operating in some form of a capacity for months on end. And the question becomes that staff. Does that staff go back to that, say, restaurant business where maybe they're concerned this happens again and they want to go get a job in a different workforce? And now you have labor issues, which are already challenging because the cost of living in Vancouver is so much. It's already challenging to get staff in those issues in those industries already. So there's lots of that stuff that are out there that I think we have to just be aware of and do our best and trust the government and the medical system.
Well, before we go, we usually have the five wire, which I think you've answered before. I was just thinking maybe we can do
the isolation
called the one wire, which is one thing that has changed your social isolation.
I was thinking the five wire, but just modified for isolation.
Yeah, let's do the five wire. Let's modify it for isolation. I got answers for you, I'm sure.
Okay, so what is your favorite takeout?
Favorite takeout? It's a good question. I'm a big fan of sushi, but I can honestly say we haven't really had much of that just because obviously the fear of people rolling it with their hands right now. So I will definitely say I've probably eaten more pizza than I should. So I'm going to have to say Panago's and Domino's. Domino's flatbread. The flat thin crust. Nice. The one we had that time when we were doing the live
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Double chicken, single ground beef with two of the nacho cheese.
Wow.
It's pretty impactful. I usually call in for a medium, and then after I hang up, I call back and make it a large and try to convince myself that I'm eating less, but it just doesn't work that way.
So you're a dips guy, eh? My wife won't even eat pizza without dip.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I remember when they kind of first kind of came out, I was thinking like, who dips this? But after a while, you kind of get used to it. And I'll be honest with you, I'll order a pizza from Panago and I'll get my dips and I'll just like dump it all over the pizza like this to eat it. If I ever went out with somebody for dinner or on a date and I had pizza with dip, they would not be calling me a second time. It's bad.
Thank God you're married.
Yeah.
So we usually ask favorite neighborhood. What is this? Favorite room in your house?
No. I'm what's your favorite quarantine album?
My favorite quarantine album. Well, I'm a big on the audiobooks. I listen. I read a lot of the audiobooks and listen to it. So actually, I just finished one from the former CEO, Bob Iger. I think it's Bob Iger, Robert Iger, who was the former CEO of Disney, which was an amazing, amazing book. I think growing up as kids, we all have a relationship with Disney. And the book kind of really starts off with he's in Shanghai Disney getting ready to open what kind of becomes the pinnacle of his career in Disney. And there was the shooting in Florida at the Pulse nightclub there, which the shooter, according to the book, was actually in Disney World. And that was his target. But he couldn't get into a venue because of extra security. So now you're kind of dealing with this. And then the same week this happened, that kid was eaten by an alligator in Disney World, all happened. So kind of this huge lift before you get into the book, and then you really hear how Disney was built and sort of how it really had challenges, as most companies do, and how it became the company it is today. So I definitely would say that it's a great book to listen to or read if someone's got time, which I'm sure we all have a lot of time right now.
Adam, you seem to have this dial. Yeah. What's next?
Favorite quarantine movie or show?
Well, I'm going to say this, but no one can judge me just because we haven't really had much to pick from. So I'm going to have to go back to my earlier suggestion of The Tiger King. Probably the worst show I've ever seen, but at the same point in time, it's like watching NASCAR. You just can't turn it off. And it almost gets to the point of like, just no more stupid stuff can happen. And then next scene, something even stupider happens and you just can't turn it off. So, I would say that, or I've been literally rewatching Suits over and over and over again. So, I mean, those are kind of my two highlights. Or I lied to you. Onward, the Disney movie that came out. That was actually pretty
cool. They released that early, right?
Yeah, I think it came out. And for all the parents out there, Trolls 2 comes out on Friday. So,
wow. What's Onward?
Onward, it's a Pixar Disney cartoon.
Okay.
So the kids love it. They seem to really, really get into it. And I try to pretend like I'm an adult and I'm not really that interested. But I think when they're down, I'm catching up on it. So,
I'm about 30 minutes into 1917, which is a new war movie that just released. And it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of things out there that maybe we all normally wouldn't find the time to watch, and now we're making time to watch them. So I think The Tiger King is the big winner. That Netflix are the big winners at the end of the day through this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. What's the first thing you're going to do outside of isolation?
I think get back to the gym. You know, I can only do so many Pilates and push-ups in one room, and it's probably just absolutely horrifying to watch me try. So getting back to the gym and just walking around like I know what I'm doing will probably give me some level of confidence. That, or probably going back to the clothing store, because I'm pretty sure none of my pants are going to fit.
Yeah, you and me both. I've come to that realization about day 15 in. It's like, oh, man.
Wet pants sales at Roots are going to be through the roof next week.
We got one more.
Yeah, I'm
hey, what about favorite cocktail or
isolation? Oh, yeah.
Isolation cocktail or beer?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. As much as I'd like to enjoy those, I really don't get much time anymore between work, the wife, and the two young kids. Waking up with a 2.5 and a 4-year-old climbing on you, wanting to play after you've had a couple beers is not the most fun, but. If I had the luxury of having something, I'm going to have to go to the Fat Tug.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, one or two of those, and you just feel like you just like I take a frying pan, hit yourself as hard as you can in the head two or three times, and that's what it feels like on the Fat Tug the next morning. So,
yeah, it doesn't work if you're getting up at 3:30.
No. Trust me, the alarm still goes off, and I try to convince myself that I can still do it at 3:30, and then by about 4 o'clock, I'm sleeping on the carpet in workout clothes. So, it's just no.
So Corey, how can people find out more about William Wright Commercial and what you guys are doing over there?
For sure. So they can definitely go to our website, williamwright.ca. And on there, you can find sort of all of our offices, all of our brokers, all the services that we offer, as well as you can also follow us on social media. We have active accounts everywhere. And if you go to our website, you can find links to the YouTube channel. And on there, we do our monthly William Wright review, which we talk about everything from a different type of project we're working on, asset class coming up. We're actually shooting one this week outdoors with social distancing in place. About the benefits of property management and why most landlords should probably consider it. Just try to educate and offer that as much as we can. So they can definitely go there and find out more about us. And we'd always love to hear from them. So send us an email.
I just want to quickly plug your guys' Instagram too, because you put those videos on Instagram on your account, and they're great. We've always picked something up.
Well, and also the email, what is it? The William Wright review. Is that the,
yeah. So we have the William Wright review that we send out, and we also have the William Wright report. One's done on a monthly basis. One's on a quarterly basis. And then that kind of provides some level of education of obviously we'll have one coming out on the effects of COVID and how it will affect our marketplace. So we try to provide education to clients and just people who want to know in every way possible. So they can definitely go find us on any social media, or then go to williamwright.ca, sign up, and you'll receive all that in your inbox.
Yeah, I was going to say, I look forward to the COVID one. I mean, we covered a lot of stuff here, but those are really thoughtful reports. So,
great. I'm glad you guys liked it.
Yeah, thanks so much for your time, Corey. That was a great conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. And I think, I could do the show probably 3 or 4 times a day right now. I have so much time on my hands. So if you might take me up on that. Well, if you run into problems next week, I can put a wig on, paint a mustache, and we can talk about something else.
Awesome. Well, have a good day.
Great. Thanks so much, guys, for having me. I really appreciate it.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Corey Wright from William Wright Commercial Real Estate Services.
Always enjoy having Corey on the program, Matt. Great realtor, commercial realtor. And you know, he's definitely got his finger on the pulse. He's got a couple different brokerages now and lots of agents that he works with. And yeah, he's talking to people all day about the commercial market. So who better than Corey?
No kidding. I feel like Corey's one of these guys where it's like separating the wheat from the chaff. He's few and far between. Thinks about the market in kind of a more profound way, right? When he was coming on, I was excited to hear what he had to say. And did not disappoint, that's for sure.
Yeah, and one thing that did disappoint is that his favorite pizza is Domino's Thin Crust. That was surprising. I was thinking, Corey, you live in, like, Vancouver's not exactly
it ain't bad. It ain't bad.
There's some pretty good pizza in Vancouver, for sure. It ain't bad. Domino's Thin Crust, though, is a worthy contender, yeah. So I'll give him that. But
no dips, kidding. But what else do we got today, Adam? Well, we're still planking the curve. For the most part, we are meeting up over in Lower Lonsdale Sunday 2 to 4. We're doing a virtual open house. The nice thing about this is it's a vacant property. There's nobody else around. Me and you are both in hazmat suits. We're at least 10 feet apart at all times, but we're inviting everyone to come down and check it out. It's going to be on realtor.ca. This is a stunning property, and this is our first virtual open house, so definitely check that out. But other than that, we're putting out 2 episodes a week. I think we're attacking this COVID thing from as many angles as possible, and I've learned a lot, and I hope that we've provided some value out there. But we're doing all this over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, so head over there to check that out. And if you want to speak to me about anything we've talked about, real estate in general, or anything at all, really, give me a call at 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also got that secret line.
info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And this secret line is getting so secret, I'm not even sure if we can comment on it anymore.
Do I feel like we used to know
the secret. He might not even be around.
Yeah, I feel like the secret's being kept from us.
Well, have a good week, guys. We'll be back on Friday. We got a phenomenal episode. Again, it's already in the can. I'm so excited about it. And take care this week. Stay home. Stay safe.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. And appreciate everybody listening. Please stay safe out there, everybody. And let's keep on planking the curve.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.